listening to the Purple Project Podcast. The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State fam, y'all know what time it is. I almost said my other podcast. I apologize. This is Triple P, the Purple Project Podcast. Yeah, that's where my mind has been at the last week and a half or so. There's been a lot of things going on in this camp, but my name is Eddie Greer III. This is the Purple Project Podcast, where we talk Kansas State athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas. Cold Manhattan, Kansas, folks. Y'all know what the deal is. Please tell your friends about the podcast. Obviously, we took kind of a week off last week with everything going on in the course of Super Bowl 55, which happened over the weekend, of course. And, of course, I'll bring on my co-host Alex in just a moment. But, of course, you can find the Pro Project Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, whether it's from Spotify, Audio Boom, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Radio.com, and if you're listening, downloading episodes of the Purple Project Podcast, please leave us, if you would like, a 5-star rating, most notably, and if you would like to be extra kind, give us a review. That will help us out tremendously here in Manhattan, Kansas. I live here in Manhattan, Kansas, where it's cold as it can get, and it's only going to get worse from here. Let's be on my co-host, who's out there in warmer weather out west, living out there in San Diego, California, none other than Double A, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening, man?
Not too much happening with me, Eddie. You know, just another day, another week for me. You know, I'm really bummed that the NFL is over because, man, it was a great NFL season, despite the ending that stinks, but hey, you know, we have some Chiefs fans, and I've told people this before, you can't win them all. You can't win every Super Bowl, you know, regardless of, you know, what you want and what you think. So, we both now know what it's like to lose to Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, we've got another thing in common, yes.
We share that. We share that in common. But with the Chiefs, you know, they still had an amazing season. You know, it obviously didn't end the way that they wanted to. But look, you know, they were going into really a tough situation with an entire backup offensive line, a quarterback who had turf toe, who had surgery today for it, and then obviously some devastating news that came out late in the week that definitely it didn't distract the team. Distraction is definitely the wrong word, but. It definitely had an effect when you hear the talk from the players and the coaches on them, and their minds might have been preoccupied as they tried to kind of finalize their prep for that as well. And then so you know they had some challenges, and they were going to Tampa playing on the road. Tampa was obviously the first team ever playing at home for a Super Bowl. So yeah, it was kind of stacked up against them. I did pick them to win, but it's kind of stacked against them. So. Hindsight being 2020, it's not as surprising as I think I initially thought it was. But it was great in the NFL, amazing. What the NFL did, it was so amazing this year, Eddie. It brought me joy because of all the K-State crumminess that was going on.
It's still going on.
They could give me a win almost every week when K-State just was not winning. So now it's gone. Now I just have a team that loses a lot because K-State men's and women's basketball has not won a Big 12 game in 2021. So, in fact, I don't even know if they've won a game in 2021. I know the men's team hasn't won a game in 2021, and I don't.
Women have not, and they lost tonight, which I'm going to get to here in a second.
And the women's team, I think that their last win was December 14th, so they haven't won in 2021 either, so. We're going to have to see a K-State basketball team win a game in 2021. So, I'm just,
I don't know. I've said on the dailies, which there haven't been any, but they're going to be a couple coming soon, promise. But yeah, K-State, basketball, both teams have still in the goose egg here for 2021, and we're in almost in mid-February here, and that's a nice transition, Alex, into the women's team. Of course, the men play.
I read your mind. That's why I transitioned right into it.
Yeah, and we got football to talk about too in the second half of the show on tonight's episode of the Purple Project Podcast. But yes, the ladies were in action tonight, and at one point, it seems to be the theme every time we record on this podcast, midweek on this podcast. The ladies' team was leading at halftime over TCU, which had a bad conference record and still has a bad conference record. But at the very end, the Lady Wildcats, the same handwritten song, lose to TCU tonight by the score of, they lose by 9, 78 to, actually, check that, they lose by 11, 78 to 67 tonight after K-State led going into the break. Does that sound familiar, Wildcat fans? That should, because every time we record on Wednesday nights, that seems to be the theme this year for this ladies' team. And the big stunner, I mean, speaking of not winning in 2021, the ladies' team have a big goose egg in conference play, 0-10. Who would have thought about that going into the year after this team? It seems to be a broken record, but it's true. This team was supposed to be, this was preseason pick top half of the conference, and pretty disappointing. I mean, yes, Jeff Media heard over his radio show yesterday that they had some positive things going out. I did not listen to the whole entire thing, but they had some positive things going. But he pointed out one thing, and we pointed that on his podcast, the turnovers. Tonight they had 19 turnovers. That's not going to get it done in this case here. But hey, I mean, we talked about a third score for this team. They're starting to get that now, whether that's Sydney Goodson or Rachel Ranke, who had 13 tonight against the Horned Frogs tonight in 36 minutes. Of course, Ioka Lee leading the way. And of course, Ioka Lee, if you have not listened to the latest daily, is on the Lisa Leslie watch list as a sophomore. Pretty impressive. 26 points, went 10 of 18 from the field, 6 rebounds for the night, had 2 blocks, but again, was not enough. They had a red-hot second quarter, Alex. They outscored TCU 20-13 and went into the break with the lead, and in the third quarter, it all went downhill from there. They got outscored in the third quarter 28-15 in this one. Emily Ebert, 10 points in this one. She was in double digits tonight. 10 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. Chrissy Carr, an off night for her tonight. And 3 of 12, that's not going to get done for one of your best players who I usually call second every time we talk about women's basketball. Alex, only 7 points tonight. They needed more production from her. That did not happen tonight. Get it from Rachel Ranke, 13 points there. But TCU with the win. TCU in conference play now, 3-9, which is still bad. 8-9. Overall, in K-State, sound like the men's team now, 5-12 overall. But the men at least have a conference win. Ladies do not in 0-10, Alex.
Yeah, you know, the last time that you and I got together for a podcast, which was a couple weeks ago, which doesn't feel like a couple weeks ago. It feels like I just had one a few last week. That really flew by. Things have just kind of been crazy here lately.
Yeah.
As you mentioned. But when I got on, or was thinking today, I was like, for the podcast, I was like, they were 0-5 when I talked with Eddie last in Big 12 play, and we were kind of like, this is, you know, they need to just figure out a way to win. You know, we're talking about how they just need to figure out a way to win, and you're asking me, you know, what do they need to do to break through? I mean, what do they need to do? And you know, I told you, I guess, they just got to find a way to break through. Well, there's no way, I thought, when we left that podcast at 0-5, the next time that we were talking, that they'd be 0-10 in Big 12 play with Because when we talked, it was after the Oklahoma State game, where they blew a big, or I shouldn't say they blew a lead. Oklahoma State had the 25-11 fourth quarter, they won by 14, and so that's what you and I were talking about, kind of feeling like the sky was falling at 0-5, not quite to that degree, but this is concerning. And then, you know, their next two games against Iowa State and Oklahoma, they didn't really have that problem, Eddie. They just couldn't win a really close game. They lost a two-point game to Iowa State, a two-point game to Oklahoma, and they were right there. They were right there in both of those games, but they just couldn't find a way to get the win. And I think the Iowa State one, I mean, you look at that, Iowa State, they're 8-5 in Big 12 play, and they're 12-8 overall. I mean, they beat K-State by 22 points the last time that they played. So, I mean, K-State clearly played better, but just couldn't quite get that win against them. And then, you know, when they go on to play Texas Tech, what, you know, lo and behold, guess what happens? K-State gets outscored by 11 in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. The game goes to overtime.
Goes in overtime, yep.
And K-State's outscored by 8 in overtime. So there you go again, you know, with that popping back up. I would think K-State plays Baylor competitive. K-State plays Baylor competitive, who is 15-2 and 10-1 in Big 12 play. I mean, you know, it's a game that they end up losing by 12, but it's a game that going into the fourth quarter, you know, that's a game that you still have with somewhat within striking distance. And so, you know, we know the K-State's capable. You know, we've seen the way they played Kentucky. We've seen the way that they beat this ranked South Dakota State team earlier in the season. You know, a South Dakota State team that at this point is 15-2 on the season. So, I mean, we know they can do it at this point, you know. And then you look at Iowa State and Eddie, they lost Iowa State, but not Iowa State, TCU. But I feel like K-State's a better team than TCU. I think that a lot of this is inside their heads at this point, Eddie. A team picked for the top half. You look at them from a talent standpoint, they're better than a lot of the Big 12 teams. They play a lot of close games. They are just, seems like they get in their own way. They're in their own heads, and they just cannot get out of it for the life of them. And it's a problem. It's a problem. You can't say it's not a problem. This team's too talented. Jeff Mitty's too good of a coach to not be able to figure this out. I understand it's a COVID season. I understand it's wonky. I understand that they have the 2-week layoff, I guess you could say, when they had the COVID issues, and they haven't won since. That's what really started the problems that we're seeing now. And I get that, and I'm sure that had a factor, but or played a factor into all of it. But look, Eddie, I mean, it's a problem. And they've got to figure it out. And they've got a couple games coming up. They got a game with KU. KU's 7-10 in the season. They're 3-8 in conference play. You're getting them at home. You're going to get another shot against Tech later in the season. They're 4-10 in conference. They're 9-11 overall. I mean, you're going to get that shot at that Tech team that you crumbled against on the road. You're going to get a shot at them again. K-State doesn't have another game the rest of the year, I believe, against a team that is that's ranked. You know, they've got they got Oklahoma State and Texas on the road, but, you know, and Oklahoma State's a good team, but look, they got to figure it out. They got to figure it out some way or another, because they're just too good. They're too good to make those types of, you know, the types of mistakes that they're making late in games, and to be blowing leads, I should say, in the second half. And if they can't get it corrected by the end of the season, you know, it's going to be an off season where I'm not saying Jeff Mitty's going to have a hot seat, but that's a team that's supposed to finish top half of the league that can't even get a conference win in the season that they were expected to possibly be playing the NCAA tournament, and that's alarming. That is alarming. And like I said, they're better than that. Jeff Mitty's better than that. I'm to be 100% honest, kind of dumbfounded that they haven't figured it out yet, and that they can't figure it out. And I'm beginning to wonder if they will figure it out before the season ends.
It might be, it might be too little, too late. 4 games left for this team on the year, obviously, and then of course you have the Big 12 tournament for the women's, obviously. But yeah, you look at this bottom half of this conference, you point out several of these records here, and it's awful. Oklahoma, 4-7, Tech, 4-10, KU, K-State's next opponent, 3-8, and that's an opportunity there to get off the goose egg there. TCU, yeah, they should be better than TCU. Got a third conference win tonight against K-State, so that's a red flag. That's a red flag and stuff right there. You're down in the bottom half of this conference there. And yeah, I mean, you played Baylor tough. You played Iowa State pretty good the second time around as well. And some of these games you let slip away when one possession here or there. Of course, it goes back to Iowa State at home a few weeks ago. And you lose again by 2 back-to-back home games in your own court, home court, to Iowa State and OU. Circle those. Right there, you play Baylor tough. That's good, but that doesn't give you a certificate of losing. if you finish out losing the rest of your games, that's 14 straight. Then you go in the offseason with a lot of questions going in the offseason. It's going to be a long offseason for these coaches in basketball. Bruce Weber already on the hot seat already. I mean, yes, Gene Taylor, now that he clarified himself, there's a lot of conversation around Gene Taylor's comments here, which is going to be a good transition for me to go into the men's side here, which they lost by 3 in what was, Alex, to me, the best effort of the entire season, taking Texas to the wire. They're coming back down by 17. You would have thought, hey, they'll fold it up like usual. But this team, K-State, this is what we're supposed to see from this men, from this young squad. Improvement. That was the theme going in here. I mean, we all know they're young, but, we've seen them make mistake after mistake after mistake. But maybe is this the turning point finally for this young team? That you're taking a ranked Texas team. I think they're ranked 13th last night. Texas team, of course, Texas. They're going to be competing for a spot in the NCAAs. But that was quite impressive there last night. There, Nigel Pack leading the way, of course, with 22 points in the game, and we finally start seeing some sunshine. That Bruce Weber defense for K-State there last night. I mean, yeah, they lost, but this, for hopefully, I mean, a lot of people are probably tuned out already on the season, obviously, and I'm going to touch on that later on in the podcast. But, I mean, you circle this one right here. Everybody said, we can sneak up on somebody. And I actually said this last time. We were 2 weeks ago. I believe I said this, that they can get a win somewhere against the Texas or KU somewhere. Yeah, I believe I did say that. So they came off and close to do that last night at home, but came up a bit short there. But Alex, my man, is this the game right here that we finally start showing some signs of improvement here in the rest of the season for these Cats?
Yeah, Eddie, I think after we talked about that a few weeks ago, before K-State went in there, slump where they went like what 2 weeks where they just got blown out like every game, Big 12 game, with the exception of the Texas A&M game that was thrown in there, because K-State, as we talked about before, at the beginning of Big 12 play, they were kind of competitive, because they played a close game with TCU, a somewhat close game with Texas Tech on the road, and then once Nigel Pack got COVID, and then the team had all the injuries,
they went downhill. That
tailspin where they just got blown out by Oak State, Texas, OU, West Virginia, Baylor, KU, and so they went through that real rough time. And you're thinking, whoa, like this is bad. You're going in the wrong direction. That's when things were looking really, really bad at Bruce Weber. That's when I was bringing it up to you, Eddie, that look, I don't think this is, I don't think what Gene Taylor and K-State wants to do, but boy, you really have to take a hard look at it, which is what was happening. Ryan Black and Mercury initially reached out to Gene Taylor and had the really big story that kind of answered a lot of questions for people.
Oh, yeah, around here, too, around Manhattan. Oh, yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah, he had the story that kind of broke, you know, kind of answered a lot of those questions, and Gene's talked with some other people since that. I think he talked to Kellis after that. I talked with John Kurtz as well. So, I mean, he's talked to some others since, but Ryan Black broke that initial story, which was very interesting, by the way. but getting back to K-State, we did talk about that. We did talk about, you know, before things got bad, you know, maybe they can sneak up on somebody in February when things start to gel. It looked like it just wasn't going to happen. The last two games, against Texas Tech and against Texas, top 15, arguably top 10 teams, because last week Texas was ranked number 6. This week Texas Tech is ranked number 7. So, yes, well, K-State played both of them when they were ranked 13, but they were top 10 week before and week after they played K-State. So you're arguably playing two top 10 teams back to back. K-State had a chance to win both of those games. I thought their game against Texas Tech was the best game that they played all year up to that point. Not all year, but that was it might have been, thinking back on that, that might have been the best game that they played all year to that point, because Tech had been playing well. Tech had been playing really well, and K-State played them really hard. K-State mm-hmm. was able to hold them under 50% field goals, which you think, oh, well, I mean, that's not that hard to do. Well, if you watch K-State's defense this year, that can be kind of hard for them to do sometimes. So you held them down enough to give yourself a chance to win. And K-State hit some shots. K-State was able to get some shots where Michael Girl got 4 threes. Nigel Pack had 4 threes. And they went 9 of 20 from 3 that game, actually.
Yeah, they both had 3, yeah.
And what killed them was going 13 for 22 from the free throw line. It's kind of what killed them, and they got up about 7 less shots than Texas Tech. But point being, K-State was, that was the first time in a long time we've seen K-State come out. And they played really hard. They played with a lot of emotion. They played competitive. They were smacking their hands on the court when they were on defense, legitimately looking like they wanted to be there, like they had a chance. And they really competed with a really good basketball team. So that was encouraging. There's no doubt about it. That was an encouraging moment from K-State. And so for them to come back against Texas and to just about beat Texas after being down, as you mentioned, double digits, was just mighty, mighty impressive. And look, we're out here, you know, it's never should be about moral victories, but we talked about it from the get-go. And we just want to see this team progress and get better and understanding the situation. Then we weren't seeing that. We saw that against Texas Tech, and then we saw them take another step against Texas where, yeah, I mean, you know, you've got a chance to win that game. You hit a three, and you're down one with 42 seconds left. And no, you didn't get the win, but Texas had to knock down 6 free throws, I believe, to get that game. They did 6, I think it was 6 free throws in a row. They had 6 free throws in a row to ice that game on K-State. So, you know, give credit to Texas. Give credit to them for, you know, good inbounds plays, hitting free throws. And look, give K-State credit, Eddie, as well for, and in my opinion, good offense down the stretch in a tight game. K-State was playing smart. They were getting easy buckets at the basket. They were moving the basketball late. They weren't settling for, you know, deep contested jumpers or threes
with
a minute to go. And so they weren't crumbling in that late game crunch time situation. That play where Mike McGirl hit the three for K-State to get down one, the way that they moved that ball and they swung it, and the way Selton McGill came driving into the lane, was able to kick that ball out to my girl. The way that they moved off, because I haven't seen them move the ball like that in months, Eddie. They were playing with so much more energy on the offensive end, and you could really see it. Now, I mean, they struggled defensively. Texas was able to have their way for good chunks of the time, and K-State tried to play some zone, and Texas was gotten fire, shooting the ball, especially in the first part of the second half. K-State was struggling to take away the drive, and then they were struggling to take away the three. But look, K-State's defense buckled down late. They got some buckets. They gave themselves a chance, and to me, they looked like a team that is really trying to, or I shouldn't say trying, a team that is beginning to learn how to win in the Big 12. I think, Fitz touched on that nicely a little bit after the game, Tim Fitzgerald, that this team, they were showing no signs of life. They were showing no signs of progression. Mm-hmm. And now They are showing those signs of life. Like I said, I've seen some people making fun of them, slapping their hands down on the court, to get ready on defense. Oh, that's what you do on a junior high team. You know what? I don't care, Eddie. If that's what's going to get
them, I don't care at this point.
Defense energy, slap their hands down on the court. Personally, I'm old school. I kind of like it. I did that when I played basketball. I'd slap my hands down on the court. Do it. Slap your hands down on the court. But they're continuing to grow. Nigel Pack, I think it's clear that he can just ball. I mean, he is just a
yes, sir. Yeah.
Man. He is a player. He had 22 points in their game against Texas. And at this point, Nigel Pack, he's averaging 12 points a game for K-State. Let's also keep in mind these two games they had against Texas Tech and Texas, these were without Dejuan Gordon, your starting guard. So you're still not at full strength, Eddie. K-State has not been at full strength since the beginning of Big 12 play, really. Really, since the beginning of Big 12 play, K-State has not been healthy at full strength, and that's been part of their problem. It's good for Selton Miguel to be able to kind of get inserted into the lineup, in my opinion, and play some of those bigger minutes, which he's been doing. He played 30 against Texas. But if you can get Dejuan back in there at full strength, I mean, that's even more help for K-State and some depth for them. So, we'll just have to see what happens with them moving forward. But these last two games have given me a lot of encouragement that maybe K-State can't finish the season a little bit better than what we were thinking. Because you look at that schedule and you thought, how the heck are they gonna win their game? I mean, how are they gonna do it? I mean, everybody's gonna just transfer out, which still may happen. You still may have some guys transfer out, but K-State just needs to keep their head down, keep playing hard. And the crazy thing is that if you look down that schedule, your next three games, I'm not saying that any of them are going to be easy, but going to the road against Oklahoma State, coming home against KU, going on the road against TCU, Oklahoma State is ranked 23rd in the country, and they're a good basketball team. There's no doubt about that. But look, they're 5-6 in conference play. They're not on the level of Texas or Texas Tech. They did beat Texas, but I still don't believe they're on the level of Texas. And then coming home against KU did smack K-State around in Allen Fieldhouse. But KU, 13-7 on the season. They're not your typical KU team. And I'll be 100% honest with you, Eddie. That game in Allen Fieldhouse, to me, that said almost more about K-State than it did about KU, because K-State was hanging around that game for longer than they deserved, because KU couldn't get a shot to fall. And they couldn't put K-State away until midway through the second half. And K-State played horrible in that game. I mean, they were bad in Lawrence, and they hung around for way longer than they should have. So if K-State can actually come out and play the way that they did the last two games, they can have a shot in that game at home against KU. And then on the road against TCU, that's probably your most winnable game left on the schedule with TCU at 4-5 conference play, 11-7 overall. Depending on what happens with the Iowa State game. The Iowa State game was a game that got canceled. Could get rescheduled. Not going to hold my breath about that. I don't know why the Big 12 would reschedule a game for a 1-11 team against an 0-9 team. But you never know. Maybe they do. Maybe they do, and I take it. It would be an opportunity for K-State to get another win. Not on the schedule as of now, though. So, you know, we'll just have to see. You know, we'll just have to see what happens. But all in all, this has been an encouraging last two games, and I just hope that they can continue to be competitive, and they can continue to get better, and we can see these young guys continue to grow, because guys like Antonio Gordon are looking better. Guys like Davion Bradford continue to show flashes. Selton Miguel continues to show flashes. Nigel Pack already looks like the real deal. I don't even think he looks like. I'm pretty sure we know that he's the real deal. And so, you know, hopefully they can just continue to build off of it.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
So if you heard any running water during that little spiel there, that's Emma finishing up with bath time. So if you hear any water in the background, that is why. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Greer, Manhattan, Kansas, Alexandria, San Diego, California, two K-State alums, and Wildcat 91.9 radio student alums as well. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Dejuan Gordon, we did not mention it in the last podcast, got hurt against A&M there early in that game, went out. So you don't have him in there. Yeah, you pretty much agree with everything that what you said there. Yeah, this team has not been at full strength since conference play started. So yeah, I mean, they have Oklahoma State next on Saturday on the road in Stillwater. 11 a.m. tip off there down there. So that's going to be see what they can do there. And then, of course, you get KU at home. Yeah, definitely not the same Kansas team that we've seen in the past. So we'll see. I mean, as much as we've seen a lot of bad from this K-State team this year, maybe things are looking up for them. So we'll see what happens next two games, obviously, before the next time we're on the podcast here. So on road at Stillwater, obviously, K-State, we know who they are in the conference play. 1-11 and 5-16, so one loss worse than the women's team at this moment in time at the recording of the Purple Project Podcast. So
they got the elusive Big 12 win.
Yep, they do have that going for them. The men at least has that, while the ladies are searching for something. So yeah, we'll see what happens. And the ladies, they welcome KU to Bramlage this weekend. So big game for K-State to try to even that season series up there before time runs out. You do not want to get swept by your in-state rival. That is for sure. I want to switch gears tonight. We got football to talk about, folks. And first, I want to talk about Skylar Thompson. And he spoke to the media a few days ago. And kind of the bigger story here, Alex, he's not going to be number 10 anymore. He's going to be number 7, which we know as quarterbacks here. Well, I'm not a quarterback, but as we've seen,
used to wear number 7, Eddie.
Yes, I know a couple quarterbacks used to wear number 7s, but very interesting situation here. So, I mean, Skylar Thompson saying that he didn't want to go out like that. I mean, he's a competitor all in all, and we know QB1 Skylar is that competitor for sure. Switching up his number for, and I'm gonna, even though he switches number to 7, I'm always going to associate him with 10 because he came here as a freshman wearing that number. But I'll be honest with you, it's going to be a little weird seeing him with that number. And I'm pretty sure K-State fam is going to be very interested to see once football rolls around in fall. I mean, spring practice is around the corner, I believe, so in a few weeks. So even with the aim for hopefully get through this cold time here here in Manhattan before things. I'm looking forward to when we're not in the teens anymore or negatives. But anyways, get back on the track here. Yeah, I mean, we're all gonna see interested to see how he does with that number, the 7. It's very historic for this university, especially for football side. And we know that number, Michael Bishop, Colin Klein, and you can reel off Alex and the others who wore that same number, who's had their impact with this K-State football program. But yeah, Scott Thompson wanted to come back for another opportunity to compete, and he's QB1. We talked about it a few episodes ago on the podcast, and he's on a mission, Alex, from what I've heard, what I've seen from the press conference here. So I mean, I want to get your thoughts on the number change here, and it's a little early. I mean, we're almost in mid-February now, but how about this change of numbers and the identity for Skylar Thompson, QB1?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest that it doesn't really surprise me now. I know he says that, he's changing the number because he wore the number in high school, I believe is what was his exact reason. I'm trying to remember now if that's exactly what it was. There was a reason behind it. I think that's because it was his number, in high school. Can't recall, but there was a reason behind the switch. But knowing Skyler, I think we all know Skyler well enough to know that he is competitive as hell, man. He is competitive as hell, and he's someone that embraces a challenge and an opportunity. And he knows who wore number 7 at K-State. He knows the people who wore that number at the quarterback position. And he embraces that, and I truly believe he's like, I want to be one of them. I'm wearing the number. I'm taking the weight of that number, and I'm carrying it. I'm gonna be the next name that you're gonna put next to the number 7 when you think of quarterbacks at K-State. You're not just gonna, you know, think of Michael Bishop. You're not just going to think of Colin Klein. You're gonna think of Skylar Thompson. Now, do I love Skylar Thompson into either one of their categories? Of the categories of either Colin Klein or Michael Bishop? No, of course not. No. But that is Skylar's MO. That's his mentality. And he welcomes those opportunities. And I love having a quarterback that welcomes that type of opportunity and that type of challenge. So while he may not have said anything directly like that, I do truly believe that while he may be switching back to a number that he used to wear, look, he's had opportunities. He's had opportunities to wear that number before. He's worn number 10. And, you know, he's coming back for his final season, and he's going all out, man. He's going all out. He wants to make his legacy. He wants to make his legacy this upcoming season. And I think this is just kind of, you know, one of those, this is part of the journey. You know, part of the journey for him to make his legacy here is to change that number. We'll see what else comes along with it. But definitely eager to see. It was definitely interesting to hear from Skylar as well, and I think it was funny for a handful of people talking about, well, you know, is he going to start? You know, is there going to be a quarterback competition? I told you, Eddie's not coming back. He's not starting. I mean, come on, like, let's be real. Man, there's just no way. And now, Jake Rubley, it's out that he will likely redshirt his first year at K-State. And with that news, then that would even more solidify that there's probably not going to be a quarterback competition, because in my mind, if there was going to be one, which I didn't think there would be, I thought it would be more likely to come from Rubley than it would be from Howard. Just based on what happened last year, I didn't think that there would be a QB competition between Skylar Thompson and Will Howard. The only way I could have seen something is if Dave Rubley just came in and just completely tore it up, which he still could do. They could take that away, and you can play 4 games and as a redshirt now, you know, with the new rules. So, you know, we still may see him out there, but with the news that he's likely going to be redshirting, I mean, that just further that Rubley will be likely redshirting, that further kind of validates, you know, our
you know, what we said, that this is Skyler's team. This is Skyler's season. And this is, you know, his moment. So I'm eager for that. I mentioned it before. I think it's going to be good for Skyler. I think it's going to be good for the young QBs, Will Howard, Jake Rootwood. I think it's going to be good for K-State. I think it's going to be good for all parties involved. Because it's going to give K-State the best chance to win. It's going to give Skyler that final season that he deserves. And it's going to give those young quarterbacks time to develop. I think that that's just a win-win-win for K-State. Those young guys, they still have years of eligibility. They're more prepared when it is their time. Although you and I have talked about this, I think we both believe that somebody in the quarterback group is going to transfer. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to see who. Because it's getting a little crowded in there. And the young guys in that quarterback room. So we'll just have to see. The point being is whoever comes out of that will have time to develop and go through that process. And look, there's been a couple guys that have said, yeah, I mean, Skyler going back was an influence on me deciding to come back to K-State for a next season. So, look, Skyler has that, you know, he has that, you know, persuasion on the guys. That, I can't remember who it was. I mean, one of the players said that they were going to run it back this upcoming year, like the Chiefs' motto was this season. Their motto all year was run it back. And apparently this K-State player had been, watching a little bit of Chiefs coverage because he said, you know, we're just going to run it back. And one of his press conferences, and I'm thinking, you don't want to run it back. Because you can't want to run it back.
Not the way they finished the season.
You want to run that back?
Hell no, no.
I don't want to run it back. We're talking about like it's a horrible season. It wasn't a horrible season. The case they did start.
They started off strong.
Started well, but Boyd ended that.
You don't want to run it back. Nah.
Poorly. So I don't want to run that back. I'm fine running 2 years ago back. That 8-4 season, I'll run that back. But I don't want to run last season back. Personally. So I just thought that was funny that you said that. I can't remember who it was either.
I think I got you covered on that one.
You might have me covered. I saw it on Twitter. In fact, I think John Kurtzman tweeted it, actually, now I'm thinking about it. But, point being, these K-State players are excited. Skyler's excited. And that's what you want. You know, you want these guys chomping at the bit, ready to come back. They've got that energy. They've got that excitement. They've got... it was missing. That energy and that excitement was just missing late in the season. And it seems like they've got that back. And hopefully they can carry it into spring ball. And they can carry it into the offseason workouts in the summer. They can carry it into training camp. Or summer camp, or whatever you want to call it. And ultimately carry it into the season. You know, that's your hope. That's the goal. And... Skyler's had it. Skyler is absolutely better than that. You've lost Skyler, the team kind of crumbled. They kind of crumbled a little bit the year. They lost their spark, the guy that really helped spark the team and kept them going and carried them. And, you know, guys looked at him and said, he's still going. I still need to keep churning ability. You know, he may not be the most gifted quarterback the K-State has ever had. But he sure does have great leadership qualities. We've talked about it a lot. I think that's really important for K-State to get back to this upcoming year. So it's going to be a big deal to have him back, and I like it. I like to move to number 7. It's going to be weird to see. There's no doubt about that. But, hey, if we're going to get a better Skyler Thompson, we're number 7. I'm here for it.
Listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Also, Chris Kleiman talked about Scott Thompson, and he had a chat with him saying also that Chris Kleiman saying that Skyler wants to play in the NFL. So that's why also he wanted to come back to K-State for that elusive six year for Skyler as well. And then speaking of which, Kleiman had a recent update for K-State spring ball, which will start actually in a few weeks in March, you know, actually finish up in April, obviously with no spring game as well. So then an update for Scott on Scott Thompson. Obviously, he's been doing a lot of soft toss as of late, and he expects him to be able to cut it, quote-unquote, cut it loose by mid-April to early May. So that's a good sign there for us K-State fam on that note there. Obviously, Scott Thompson getting knocked out of the Texas Tech game last year. Up until that point, he had that huge win against Oklahoma. 626 passing yards, 4 touchdowns through the year. On the ground, 38 rushing yards, but had 3 scores before that hit by Tech that knocked him out of the game and knocked him out of the season as well, which kind of was, if you want to look at that, if you want to look at, it was a turning point, if you will, there with the early success of Will Howard. But then we know how that happened in the second half of the season. But getting back to your running back, yeah, you don't want to run that second half back, absolutely. And John Kurtz, the sports director for K-Man here in town, said that was Noah Johnson who said that. So he's coming back. So he got word that Skylar was coming back. He immediately jumped on that bad wagon and said, of course, running back, but he wanted to be back as well. So he is going to be in there as well. He started every game last year for Noah Johnson, we're talking about. And he finished first in the Big 12. Actually, yeah, this is a bad stat, actually. But first in the Big 12 conference with sacks allowed. That's not good whatsoever. If I'm reading that right, that ain't good. That's not good. So Noah Johnson, you definitely don't want to run that back, giving up a lot of sacks and getting your quarterback hurt and getting him knocked out of the season. So you want to keep him, Skyler, upright in the upcoming football season. I'm running down some of the key seniors that are coming back here on the Purple Project Podcast. I'm going to run it down here, and then, of course, to kind of wrap it up, this episode, a couple coaching changes. For staff changes. So, Jerron McPherson, Alex Unauz, he's coming back as well. He started every game last year, led the team with 54 tackles, 2 interceptions. Of course, one of those was a game ender against Texas Tech. I believe he had one. I can't remember which the interception he had. I want to say Oklahoma, but that's probably wrong there. It's one of those home. I know Texas Tech for sure. I can't remember who was the other one is there, but McPherson coming back.
I can't remember off my head either what it was.
Yeah, we'll have to go back to the memory break on that one. Cody Fletcher, who's been a big part of that defense, he's coming back as well. He made 3 starts last year, 44 tackles, a sack and a half for Cody Pletcher, who came from the JUCO ranks and eventually being on the special teams team and then being a starting linebacker, obviously doing to what the COVID this year or this past or last year, I should say. We're still in it, but especially last year with Justin Hughes and Elijah Sullivan not being able to play due to the pandemic or whatever happened to them, Cody Fletcher really stepped up, and he stepped up in that position last couple years, and that's good to see him back. He's going to be an impact player again on that defense. And, of course, with the departure of Wyatt Hubert for the NFL draft, preparing for him, he's just coming off the Senior Bowl, Wyatt Hubert. Bronson Massey coming back to that K-State defense.
Yep.
He played every game last year. He made a couple of sacks last year, 2.5 sacks. 13 tackles as well, and he's got that veteran dog to him. He's played over 40 games at K-State, and he's looking to build off career highs across the board from last year, what I just reeled off there. So I just reeled off 5 key seniors who are coming back to K-State for a purpose. I know Jerron McPherson will say they had unfinished business a couple of months ago and all that other stuff like that. Yeah, Cody Fletcher. So basically, looking at that defensive side, you have at least one player on each level. You have Bronson Massey, which we talked about, up front in the trenches on the DN. You have Cody Fletcher in the second level. And you have, of course, the reliable McPherson on the back end. So that's 3 crucial players right there in the mix there. You're losing Hughes. You're losing Sullivan to the NFL draft there. So, yeah, I mean, these seniors that we're going to be talking about for the upcoming year, this is huge for not only for the coaching staff, Chris Klieman, but this team overall that really struggled down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, it really is. And going into the offseason, we didn't know. We didn't know who was going to come back, who was going to leave. I think we knew that a few guys were going to come back, and I think we also knew that a good chunk were going to leave. The question was really just who, you know, who were going to be the ones that stayed and leave, and stayed and left. And for K-State, honestly, I think it went about as expected when you look at that. But there's some big names that are coming back. You know, you mentioned, having Bronson Massey back. That's huge. That's huge for the defense, being able to have McPherson back. That's also huge. Two huge pieces that you're able to bring back. A couple pieces in the offense that you're able to bring back. Starters, legitimate starters that can make big impacts, you're bringing back. And then obviously, as we... For K-State, you know, it's... You look at it, and I think that I mentioned this a few weeks ago on the podcast, but you look at that roster now going into next season, and I think when the season ended, we kind of sat here. I mean, we were kind of like, I don't know. I don't know. There's some optimism going into next year looking at, you know, kind of the way this thing ended, all these transfers, the recruiting class isn't terribly big, and I don't know how much you can rely on that. You know, what's K-State going to be able to do? And look, you know, K-State's been able to get some players that we thought may have left to come back. And at the same time, they've been able to scoop some guys up in the transfer portal that they've been able to add that mm-hmm. will be immediate impact players.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some freshmen coming in that could have immediate impacts on the team. Maybe a few more guys can have immediate impacts than initially thought, or at least I initially thought. And so, when you kind of take a look at the roster now and take a look at that depth chart now, you're kind of thinking, you know what? With Skylar back and that group, K-State can be a winning team in the Big 12 going into 2021. Yeah, they can do that. Are they a team that can compete for a Big 12 title? I don't know. If things break right, maybe. But can K-State have, more than anything, can K-State have a season similar to the season they had a couple years ago? Can they get back in that direction? Kind of get away from whatever happened this last year? Because we thought K-State was going to do better than they were the year prior. They kind of back to like,
yep.
It sure started that way. If it looked like they were going to go that direction, then they just dipped. Can they get back to what they were doing at the beginning of this last season, what they were doing the season before when they went 8-4, 8-5 after the Bull loss, but 8-4 in the regular season? And I think you look at this group and think, yeah, you know, they have the ability to do that. They have the ability to be a team that can have a winning record in the Big 12 in the Big 12 conference. A team that can win 7 or 8 games. A team that can play in a good bowl game. And, you know, I think that these are things that they can do, things that they are realistic, and I think that they can kind of get this thing back on the rails when you look at this roster. You know, time will obviously tell. Well, being able to get some of those guys back that you mentioned is really going to help them. And it'll really help the young guys. And I know people probably get sick of hearing me talk about older guys helping younger guys, but if you can get those guys some experience but not have to just throw them in the fire, I really think that's the best way to do it. And I know that Chris Klieman wants guys that can play immediately, and he's right, you do want guys that can play immediately, but look, he also talks about we need to be bigger, faster, stronger after that Texas game. And he said that, you know, Texas just bigger, faster, stronger. You know, and looking back at some of the other teams, West Virginia, they were just bigger, faster, stronger
Well, part of what's going to help your players get bigger, faster, and stronger is if you don't have to throw your freshmen into the fire when they're not big enough, fast enough, and strong enough, and you give them time to develop in your system, in your scheme, and develop physically and develop mentally. So that's big. That's big to have that crew back. It's big to help them because, like I said, they'll help those players develop mentally. They can develop physically in case they can put a better product in the football field. And I think having some veteran leadership is an important thing. We see it right now with the men's basketball team. They don't have a lot of it, mm-hmm. and it's showing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have Mike McGurl. That's it. They missed that veteran leadership. If they had it, it'd probably be a different, you know, things would probably be a little different for them right now. Because as bad as things were last year, they had guys like Xavier Sneed who could hold things down, and at least they could get a few wins. You know, the season that Dean, Barry, and Cam were freshmen, you know, they had some seniors that were around there. At least they were able to get 5 Big 12 wins. So, you know, you look at the football team, you can have those veterans around there. That's going to help K-State. That's going to make them a better football team. It's, you know, just going to benefit them. So, it's huge. It's huge for them, Eddie. And defensively, you're not just getting players back. You're getting some of your best players back. And I think that's the biggest thing. Offensively, you're getting probably your most important player back. I mean, you're getting really important players back that are going to fundamentally change the way your season looks. So that's big for K-State. That's big for Coach Klieman, and let's see what they can do with it.
Yeah, it's huge for that coaching staff to have that senior leadership on this team, of course, with a lot of young players and, of course, a mixture of young players, new recruits, and the transfer portal. We're definitely going to – I've been saying that for a while now – we'll dedicate an episode in the near future looking at all the recruits and transfers coming into K-State for the fall football season here on the Triple P Pro Project Podcast. Alex Aiden, Eddie Greer talking K-State football and, of course, basketball as well tonight. We talked about that in the first half, and now we're itching closer to the end of this podcast with some coaching movement here on this step, of course. And it comes on the offensive side with Courtney Messingham focusing now on as the right receivers coach, which I found interesting. And then Jason Ray was originally wide receivers coach, and we know the history, well, not the history, last year's struggles with the wide receivers. He got moved to the tight end and fullbacks coach, if I'm not mistaken, there as well. Two very interesting moves there on the staff. And Chris Klieman, at one point, I read somewhere, said that I want somebody who has their eyes focused on the passing game, which is, I felt that was interesting in itself. Also, given their struggles when Scott Thompson went out for the rest of the year with that critical injury there. So we'll see what happens on the passing game coordinator situation there. But two interesting situations there. Obviously, the wide receivers last year were just terrible. Absolutely terrible in the inconsistency, drop balls. And, you know, it goes back to what I said at the beginning of this podcast, of the beginning existence of the podcast. But then the wide receivers was their strength. And it turned out to be one, or probably one of their major weaknesses from last year. And if you've listened to any of the episodes of football season, you know what we're talking about. So, yeah, you know that. So, Jason Ray, I believe it was the same podcast. I want to say Fitz, the Gold Podcast, one of those episodes, they're talking about, you know, all this movement. I want to say 10 or 12, one of those two. But anyways, right in there with the good podcast of Go Podcast. If you're not subscribed there, you're missing out some good stuff there. But, you know, somebody said that, you know, this could be, I believe it's actually 10 or 12 podcasts, if my memory is correct now. I believe Ryan Gilbert, somebody said that, you know, with this movement going on now within the coaching staff, I mean, we saw with Bill Snyder, the loyalty of the coaches and doing the same old thing. And you saw on the football field, especially on the defense side of the ball, saw the same old, giving up big plays, not a change in the defensive scheme. whatever, right? So now with the change, now within Klieman's staff now, I mean, obviously Chris Klieman is focused on the defense side of things, right? So now the offense, which now Jason Ray was coming as a wide receivers coach, I thought he did a good job the first year. And then obviously a total 180, they were just disastrous on the wide receiver spot. Supposed to be one of their strengths. So, yeah, and I think one of them said on that podcast saying that this might be their last shot. And he was, I think it was talking about Jason Ray, because you don't get it done here with the tight end and fullback, you might be hitting that door. So, I mean, with the switch and then the coordinator mess cam, now I don't know with, obviously he was the offensive coordinator, I don't know if he still is or not at the moment of time. I mean, I don't know if you know any more on that situation, Alex, or not, but this move as wide receivers coach for Cordy Messingham, you know, I find it very odd at the moment, very weird at the moment, so I don't know what he's going to do. Hopefully a little bit better than Jason Ray if they're going to make these type of changes within the coaching staff. But, Alex, kind of your thoughts a little bit on this change, and you with the return of Skylar Thompson, you would think this team will be able to score more points, put more points on the board. Obviously, Will Howard struggled last year. Obviously, freshman moments, you're going to get that, but he really struggled down the stretch, but had a good game against Texas. But Will Howard started off very strong, right? And then winning that, we were very high. We were all high going in, not that kind of high, but football high going in.
We thought we were going to Cherry World for the Big 12 championship.
Yeah, we thought we're going to compete right there. And then it all crumbled when West Virginia. It all started right there for him. So it all goes back to what you're saying, having that senior leadership on either side of the ball. You're gonna have Skylar Thompson back. So now you gotta have receivers that can catch the football, tuck it away, get some critical yards, make the catches, tight end, same thing like that. So these are two huge moves within the offensive side of the ball, Alex. So what are your general thoughts about these moves here for the K-State offense?
Yeah, so you know, I was actually reading a little bit about this in the from that. You know, he talks about how he said, I can't answer actually your question, Maddie, because Corey Messingham will coach the K-State receivers, and as you mentioned, Jason Ray, he'll handle the fullbacks, tight ends, and Messingham's going to continue to call the plays for the Wildcats. So
there you go.
It didn't technically say that he was the offensive coordinator, quote unquote. It just says that he will continue to call the plays. And that he just switched the position duties with Ray. And you're exactly right. Chris Klieman said that the main reason was because he wanted the play caller to be more actively involved in the passing game. He actually said that that was something that they talked about before Christmas as a staff. And he said they sat on it, they came back, and after more conversations, they just decided that they wanted the play caller to be more involved on a daily basis. And in practice with the passing game. So clearly they were not happy with what was going on in the passing game.
And they should be happy.
Maybe throwing Corey Messingham at, you know, out at receivers will help us, you know, it'll help the play calling, you know, it'll help us call maybe, you know, K-State was not good in some of that late game play calling. You know, maybe it'll help with that. You know, maybe it will help with, you know, our receivers who were just atrociously bad. And, you know, maybe it's that perfect change that's needed. And so, you know, time will tell, as Kellis puts it, if the stats shuffle pays dividends. But it does seem like a good time for something new. To see if it works, see that it sticks, and just to throw a couple other stats, in K-State last year, they averaged 185.7 passing yards a game, and that's not good. That's not good in the average 200 yards a game passing. and their two leading receivers, as you and I have both noted before on the show, neither one was a receiver. It was Deuce Vaughn and Briley Moore.
Yep.
Running back and a tight end. It was not a receiver. And we both talked about it. Sebastian Taylor led the team with 293 yards receiving. That's not good. That's not good. That is not good. It literally makes me laugh every time I look at K-State's receiving stats because they're just so sad. Like I don't know how they were that bad last year at receiver. So hopefully this shuffle helps with that. I don't know how many K-State fans are going to see it that way because not a lot of K-State fans have faith in Corey Messingham right now. So, I don't know how well received that's going to be with them. But look, Eddie, I'm here for it. I said that earlier about Skyler. You know, anything to try something different, a fresh perspective, as Kellis put it, go for it. Try it. See if it works. I'll go one step further. You talked about Jason Ray, he needs to handle fullbacks and tight ends. And if it doesn't work for him, you think he could be out the door? I'm going to go as far as this is a last shot for Betts, Corey Messingham. If K-State struggles offensively again this year, and they struggle with play calling again, and they struggle with the receiving corps again, I think you very well can see him going out the door because Chris Kleiman has shown that he's willing to make some of those moves that Bill Snyder did not always make, where just Bill Snyder was so loyal to his staff. Chris Kleiman also went. This move is a perfect example of him wanting to win football games and to try something different. And I don't see Chris Kleiman as somebody who's going to just sit on his hands. So if K-State is not effective at the wide receiver position this year, I don't believe that Corey Messingham will be in charge of the receivers going into 2022. If the K-State offense is as poor as it was in 2020, I don't think Corey Messingham is drops the coordinator going into 2022. So I kind of feel like it's make or break for both of those guys, and this is kind of the last shot of Chris Kleiman saying, you know what? Neither one of you had a very good year where you were, so let's swap you, okay? Let's see if one of you can get going and maybe, help the team out, help yourself out, and, let's see before we make a move. And that's kind of the way I read it, kind of the way I feel it. Maybe that will light a little bit of a fire, under a guy like Corey Messingham, really focus even more on that play call and maybe focus more on, trying to, come up with some creative play calls, putting some guys in some better positions. So, maybe it helps. Maybe it does, Eddie. Maybe Corey Messingham getting into that wide receiver room every single day will help his offense. Maybe he will be able to find ways to draw things up for Deuce that he was not able to last year. Maybe he will find ways to get Malik Knowles involved in the game plan in ways that he was not able to. Or Sebastian Taylor, who showed promise at certain times. Maybe he can find a way to do some of these things. And, that's ultimately the help. With Jason Ray, we'll see with him. I mean, tight ends and fullbacks. You look at it and think, how important are those positions? But, in a K-State offense, pretty important. Two pretty important position groups. And so, let's see. I mean, K-State had a pretty good season tight end. So, we'll see what he can do with the tight end groups at Briley Moore. We'll see what he can do at the fullback position. But more importantly, or more interestingly, both, more importantly and more interestingly, is a tight end position. So, we'll see what happens there. But I think that it's kind of make it or break it for both guys, Eddie. So we'll see what happens, and we'll see what effect it has. I don't think it can get worse than last year. I think it only can get better, but I'm not sure. So I don't want to say it confidently. But I think that this can only be a good thing for K-State this year, and only be a good thing for those guys
I think this is kind of the make or break moments.
Yeah, yeah, I'm kind of thinking the same thing as well. You can't with that with type of weapon. Well, at least in the backfield, at least with Skylar Thompson and Deuce Vaughn back in the backfield, and of course you have your receivers. And look, no, Sebastian Taylor's going to be out. Speaking of him, he's going to be out of spring ball with an injury. He's dealing with that. And then T.J. Smith, who suffered an ACL injury, who was flying around the defensive side of the ball. He was playing quite a bit in the safety spot. He's recovering pretty well from the ACL injury, so I kind of wanted to get off track with that a little bit. So that's kind of an update there on those guys. So Sebastian Taylor, of course, had his moments inconsistently on the receiver side. He'll miss the spring ball as well as he's trying to recover from injury. But yeah, I'm with you there on that for sure. I mean, yeah, you struggle offensively like you did this, like you struggle offensively like you did in the second half of the year last year. Then yeah, you might be looking for another place for work. So definitely, we'll talk more. I'm sure we will about this as 2021 spring ball gets going in a couple weeks. We'll be just talking a lot about that as well. So definitely, that's kind of been kind of since we didn't record last week. So this episode will be up at our usual day on Friday afternoon at some point. So yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. A lot's happened. Basketball continues to lose. We talked about, but men, do we see a light there? Women trying to find something there. We're starting to get a lot of football talk now with spring ball around the corner. Alex, anything else on your end before we wrap this thing up tonight?
You know what, Eddie? I think for me, really nothing else. I just want to, you know, we saw Casey have a couple competitive game against you know, Tech, and then Texas, which was obviously encouraging. Now I'm eager to see if they can do it on the road. You know, you're going on the road against Oklahoma State. They're now in the top 25 as well, so you're going to continue your streak of top 25 games matchups. And how can you go on the road against the ranked team? Can you compete with them there? Because we haven't seen K-State compete on the road with a ranked team since probably, might have been Texas Tech back in early January. That might have been the last time that they competed with a ranked team on the road, and that was still an 11-point loss as well. So, we'll just have to see. But let's see if they can take it on the road. You've had a couple close games at home. You just about knocked off Texas. Can you go on the road and can you play Oklahoma State the way that you played Texas Tech and Texas? Can you come out? Can you play with that energy? Can you keep that game close? Can you give yourself a chance to win that game? I think that is what I'm eager to look at and look forward to. But as frustrating as that last Sunflower showdown was in Lawrence, just because K-State played so bad, I watched that KU team and thought, man, that is a beatable team. And man, if K-State would have had, man, just some thinking back to some of the K-State teams we had, it would have taken me, in my mind, I was like, golly, I can think of a lot of K-State teams that could beat this KU team. So, you know, if K-State can have a good performance against Oklahoma State, you know, if they can find a way to pull an upset on the road, I think that might have just a little spice to that Sunflower Showdown game, just because KU doesn't quite look like KU right now. And there's no doubt that if K-State can find a way to pull an upset off of a team like KU, that could really help Bruce Weber. That could really do a ton for the K-State team from a confidence perspective. It would do more than beat Texas would have last night. It's great, even though Texas is a better team than KU, beating KU would be a bigger deal for the players, would be a bigger deal for the coaches, would be a bigger deal for the fans.
So, really, that ultimate prize for K-State that's it is still out there for them. And, you know, they have that opportunity to be able to do it against KU. And, you know, Mike McGurl said after that KU game, we've got some soul searching to do. Mm-hmm. And they did some soul searching. They came out. They played a couple good games. So we'll see if they can keep it up, and if they can stir up just maybe a little bit of intrigue going into that Sunflower Showdown, because that would help. That would help the players' confidence. That would help with the coaches. It would sure help Bruce. And that pressure cooker that he's sitting on right now. So. I'm kind of eager about both of them. I'm kind of interested in both of those things. You know, it's really not, we talk about it, it's not about wins and losses at this point, but, the last couple games have made things a little more interesting for K-State now that the outlook of the rest of the season could be. See what happens down the road, but I'm eager to see how these next two games go. I think that they're going to be pretty interesting for K-State.
Yeah, they could be as well. So, the Oklahoma State, this Saturday at 11, and then you come back home on a rescheduled. Originally, I can't remember the first original date for the KU game here in Bramlage, but they rescheduled it for the 17th. So, coming back here, that is... We'll see, 14, 15. That is a Wednesday night, if I'm not mistaken, Alex.
Yep.
17th. So, yeah, we're going to be, yes, sir. Yeah, we're going to be recording right after that game. So, if it's a prime, I believe that should be a prime time game, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the scheduling.
Yeah, I think it is a 7 o'clock central. If I recall correctly, I think that's when that game is.
Okay, so, yeah, so we're doing it right on the fly. So, yeah, definitely. So, We'll definitely, next week on the podcast, we'll definitely have the lowdown of part two, the Sunflower Showdown with the men. We'll see if Mike McGurl, Nigel Pack and company can knock out KU here in Bramlage, here in Manhattan, Kansas. So that's going to be an interesting game here for them. As you know, they got some momentum now off that Texas. I know it was a loss, but that might be a sign of things to come. We'll just have to see what happens there. Can the women get a win against KU this weekend? They have them here at home this weekend as well. Huge game for them. K-State desperately looking, Alex, for that loose win. I think they gotta get this one. KU 3-8. You mentioned earlier, K-State's way better than some of these teams, ladies-wise, in the conference. So a lot of things heating up, and be out on the lookout for the dailies here next couple days as well. I'm going to have a couple on track and tennis as well. Tennis coming off of a loss last weekend. And track continuing to do big things as well. A couple individuals had some big weekends, had some big meets, or big races, actually, I should say, last weekend as well. So we want to get covered that, I'll cover that as well. So good stuff, Alex. All right, Alex. We shall talk again after the KU game goes final, the Sunflower Showdown Part 2. We'll see if K-State can knock out the Jayhawks.
I look forward to talking to you then, and we'll see if they can pull it off. But either way, that'll be a hot conversation because the Sunflower Showdown, there's always something to talk about around the Sunflower Showdown. I've learned that, so regardless of what happens, we'll have something to talk about.
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap things up for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast this evening. Big thanks to my co-host, Alex Eden. My name's Eddie Greer III, saying thank you guys for downloading and listening to Triple P. Go Cats! And remember, a lot of action this weekend with all the spring sports in action. Be out on the lookout for more stuff in the Purple Project Podcast. But right now, we're signing out. This has been another edition of the Purple Project Podcast.
listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.